Hey guys, Bill here. We recorded this AFC East podcast last week with Doug Kide, who had a baby in the meantime. So congratulations, Doug. But we recorded it before the third preseason game, and you know what happened in that game. Julian Edelman tore his ACL. He's done for the year. Very frustrating news for Patriots fans, of course. We talked about the Patriots maybe not going 16-0 this year because of injuries being a big concern. Of course, we don't mention it in the podcast because it hadn't happened yet, but the Edelman injury does impact things. They're okay. I mean, it's not as if the Patriots are going to be doomed on offense without Julian Edelman. They have guys who can play in the slot. They have Chris Hogan, who played in the slot in Buffalo for a stretch of time, but will probably stick outside. Danny Amendola, you would figure, would be first in line to take over that slot receiver role. Of course, he has injury concerns, but besides that, you know, he can certainly do a reasonable imitation of Julian Edelman in the slot. Couldn't even see Brandon Cooks take some snaps there as well. Austin Carr, a street free agent, could be, you know, in the running as a background, as a sort of a receiver who might fill in as well if he makes the roster. So injury concerns there. Obviously, it does impact their chances of going 16-0 by a little bit, but you would still figure the Patriots are going to be a very good football team. So please keep that in mind. Again, we recorded that before the Edelman injury, but otherwise, the AFC East should be unaffected. Thanks so much for listening, and really appreciate you checking out the show. We have Doug Kide today, and we're coming back with more shows next week, but here first is the AFC East podcast. Welcome to the Bill Barnwell Show. I'm Bill Barnwell of ESPN, and we are here to finish up the division preview section of this podcast. And we are finishing up with the division which contains the Super Bowl champion, or reigning Super Bowl champion, New England Patriots, but we're going to get to them in a second. We're going to start with the Buffalo Bills, and we're joined to talk about the entirety of the AFC East by NESN's Doug Kide. Mr. Kide, how are you?
I'm doing very well, Bill. How are you doing?
I'm great. I'm super excited to talk about a division that has two teams that appear to be in a rebuild, one team that appears to be a little deluded about where they are, and then maybe the best team in football. I think consensus probably the best team in football to finish up. But let's start with the team, one of the teams that appears to be in a bit of a rebuild, the Buffalo Bills, who have been on the cusp of contention over the past few years. Maybe if things had broken right last year, given that they did win 8.5 games by their Pythagorean expectation, they could have made the playoffs, but 2-6 in one-score games, lost a bunch of heartbreakers. The Dolphins game comes to mind as an example, and finished 7-9, and appear to have decided to rebuild yet again. They have fired Rex Ryan, they hired Sean McDermott, they have traded Sammy Watkins, who they traded 2 first-round picks for recently. They have decided to revamp and go after picks in next year's draft. So let me ask you, Doug, do you think this rebuild, at least from what you've seen so far in terms of their decision-making, will be any different from the rebuilds of years past in Buffalo?
Probably not, but I think it's still probably the smart move to do because clearly they weren't going to be competing for the division. Clearly they weren't probably going to be in contention for a wild card spot. So, I mean, there's only so much you can really do in the Bills situation, but I just, I don't know. I have a little bit more faith in McDermott than I ever did in Rex Ryan, so I guess that's a good start. And they don't have the worst quarterback, so, I mean, maybe it'll be a little bit different, but I don't know. I was confused at first by the Watkins trade and by the Darby trade, but, you know, looking at it more and more, it's like, what else were they going to do? At least they get some more picks for next year. Obviously, it looks bad in hindsight after giving up 2 firsts for Watkins, but, you know, that's in the past now. So I guess this is all a relatively smart move by the Bills.
Yeah, I mean, it's totally not out of the question. I think that it's a plan. You know, who knows if it'll work out, but I think there's some logic behind it, certainly. And you mentioned their quarterback, and it does seem like, I don't know what to attribute this to, but it seems like there is a pretty big disconnect between what the numbers say about Tyrod Taylor, which say he's a pretty good quarterback, certainly when you consider his running value as well to what he can do as a passing quarterback, and the perception of what he is in Buffalo. I mean, last year they gave him an extension and then basically decided that they didn't want to give him the extension anymore and ended up renegotiating and turning it into what really amounts to a one-year deal with a one-year option for the Bills after this year and then three dead years of money after that. So, I mean, given that they are thinking about rebuilding and sort of trying to, you know, retool their roster, does it make sense to hold on to Tyrod Taylor? I mean, does it feel like kind of a season where they're sort of looking for a pretense to move on from him? Because it seems like they are talking about rookie fifth-round pick Nathan Peterman as a viable quarterback of the future based on a few preseason passes, which doesn't seem like the best idea.
No, I mean, I don't know. I think that you can tread water with Tyrod Taylor. You're not completely bottoming out. You don't completely lose the fan base by having him as your quarterback. And, you know, I like the fact that they added Peterman. Some teams tread water with quarterbacks and don't add the rookies. I'm a little bit surprised that they waited until the fifth round to do so. But if they are relatively high on Peterman, I like the idea of adding a quarterback whenever you can. But no, I mean, Tyrod's still relatively young, right? I'm looking it up as we speak, 28 years old.
Yeah.
So I guess there's probably not a whole lot of room for drastic improvement there, but I think that he's a quarterback that if you can rebuild around him and get your roster talented enough, I think that he could bring you to the playoffs. So I don't mind the idea of keeping him around.
Yeah, I mean, think about the quarterbacks who have made the playoffs in recent years. Like, I think maybe Ryan Tannehill's on the same tier as Tyrod Taylor, maybe a little better in some ways, a little worse in other ways. Like, the Dolphins made the playoffs with Ryan Tannehill last year. Like, it's hardly out of the question that you can pull it off. I don't think he's the problem. You know, I think there's other issues on this roster, one of which is that they've handed out some enormous contracts to players who, you know, maybe aren't worth those contracts. Cordy Glenn has one of the three best left tackle contracts in football. Charles Clay has one of the most egregious contracts in any position in all of football in terms of his production. Marcel Darius got a ton of money up front. And it's not like those guys are bad players necessarily, but there's not many guys on rookie deals who are, you know, relative bargains on this roster. There's been so many rookies who have been traded who haven't worked out. I mean, there's very little from the draft read figure, okay, these guys are going to be the core of our football team right now. The guys who are contributing are players they acquired via trade, LeSean McCoy types, all right, Jerry Hughes, for example, guys who they signed as undrafted free agents, like Tyrod Taylor, for example. All right, last year was Zach Brown, who they brought in, who was very effective, Lorenzo Alexander. And then some draft picks, but not many. I mean, it seems so backwards relative to what it seems like everyone else in the league has figured out about how to build a roster.
Yeah, I agree. And I mean, part of that is just the fact that they have struggled in the drafts, certainly. So perhaps, you know, the change there at the top at the GM will help. But no, that really has been their biggest problem, is that they just haven't been able to build in a way to construct a good, cheap roster. Because like you said, when you're paying guys like Cordy Glenn and Marcel Darius and all these guys such big contracts, it doesn't really leave you that much room to fill in your roster otherwise. So I don't know. It's just a weird team where year after year after year, you'd think that eventually they would have some year like the Miami Dolphins did last year. But, you know, it's not going to be another one of those years. And who knows if that's even going to come next year. But those draft picks definitely have to start panning out. And that's why, like I said, I don't really mind the trades that they made. But something has to change there. And yeah, like you said, I don't think that Tyrod's the problem. It's everywhere else. And I don't know. I mean, I would have figured that they would have had a decent defense, but even that at this point, I'm not too sure about.
Yeah. I mean, they've had holes in defense, and they did change their scheme this year. They're moving back to a 4-3, I believe, which is going to impact how they will approach their defensive fronts. Guys like Reggie Ragland, who were brought into play in a 3-4 last year, aren't necessarily going to have roles that stand out on the defense. But it's not as if there's not a bunch of talent here. I mean, and you see this as someone who covers the Patriots, like, the Patriots had no qualms about signing Chris Hogan and Mike Gillisley as restricted free agents. They, you know, and you talk about sort of how they value players, like, they didn't want to franchise Stephen Gilmore. And I think it was $13 million maybe or so a year. Like, it was less than he's getting on an annual basis from the Patriots on a long-term contract. So, you know, I'm not going to say the Patriots are perfect. I'm not going to say that everyone should copy whatever they do. But I think it's fair to say that they're better at valuing players than a lot of other teams. And when you're letting guys go, the Patriots are saying, oh, this guy's actually pretty useful, we want him on our roster. And then we saw with Chris Hogan last year, he was very productive in his role with the Patriots. It's sort of like, something needs to change here. Like, you guys are doing something wrong. And I don't think it's a talent thing as much as it's been a administration and a valuation thing.
Yeah, it is strange, too, because, I mean, they could have kept Mike Gillisley. I'm not, I don't think that, you know, a backup running back is going to alter your team or anything, but I think that Stephon Gilmore certainly could have. I think that that's a player that if you have the money to re-sign, you should do everything that you can to do it, especially the way that he's looked in New England so far. He looks very good. But even a guy like Zach Brown, I know that they're changing the defense around a little bit, but Zach Brown was signed for relatively cheap by the Washington Redskins. So that was a talented player that they had last year that I guess they're probably just planning on moving on to Reggie Ragland or someone else in that position. But you would have thought that he would have been useful to this team to sign to a long-term deal. And then he's still relatively young, too, so maybe he would have even lasted through the rebuild if they could have signed him to a long enough term contract.
Yeah, and I mean, it has to be disconcerting because if he's, you know, obviously if you're a Bills fan, you're seeing those guys succeed elsewhere in your division when it comes to the Patriots three guys, so that it has to be frustrating at the very least, given that you know, you're watching these guys play and you're thinking, okay, well, they're talented. Why are we getting rid of them for nothing? And so, I mean, at this
Hogan's
point...
Hogan's a really glaring one, too, I think, because... He was so good last year, and he's been so good again in training camp this year. He hasn't done much in the preseason yet, but I mean, he's a guy that teammates are referring to as Mr. Perfect. So he's a guy that, in practice, he's showing up. He does all the right things. He's an extremely talented athlete. He's one of the most talented athletes on the Patriots, which is really saying something. And they could have re-signed him to a decent long-term contract before he even hit restricted free agency. So. I don't really know what the deal was there with what they weren't seeing in Buffalo, but I mean, he's going to be the number three receiver in New England, and he should probably be a number two somewhere. He's that good, and he was that good last year.
Right. I mean, this isn't exactly a loaded depth chart in Buffalo where you have, after Anquan Boldin came in and retired after the Sammy Watkins trade, you have Jordan Matthews, you have Corey Brown from Carolina, Andre Holmes from Oakland, Walter Powell, who flashed a little bit here or there. Zay Jones, our second-round pick, Rod Streeter, Brandon Tate, a lot of guys who are, you know, once-upon-a-time fantasy football waiver wire guys, and then Matthews and Jones, who, you know, could it work out? Sure, of course, but, I mean, it wasn't like they were so deep at wide receiver that they said they could say, okay, well, we don't really need Chris Hogan. Like, it just seems like it was a bit of a waste. And you think about, even with the Gilmore signing, for example, so they were going to get a third-round comp pick if they had decided to not sign anybody in free agency. And instead, it's not like they signed a big guy to replace, you know, to replace Gilmore. They make a big signing elsewhere on the roster. They signed a bunch of guys who aren't really that impactful and don't make all that much money. I mean, Micah Hyde, okay, makes sense. You want to bring in a useful cornerback and that, or useful kind of cornerback safety hybrid. That makes some sense. But they added guys like Patrick DeMarco at fullback. They added Vlad Dukas, Andre Holmes, Stephen Hauschka. Those guys are going to prevent them from getting a third round comp pick unless they cut most of them. So, if you can't manufacture those kind of guys, like your backup guard, your you know, shot at a big play wide receiver, your kicker, if you can't find those guys for cheap, it really says a lot about your roster construction and sort of the decisions you're making with your personnel. So we'll see if it's going to be different with Brandon Bean, who was hired after the draft and after free agency. But, you know, in terms of the Doug Whaley era, I really have – I don't have a lot of good things to say.
No, I would agree with that. Yeah, it's that's a very strange approach, and – it's just a tough situation even for, you know, the new GM there to take over the team after the draft and after free agency, because this year almost already looks like a lost year. I mean, obviously he made the trades, which I think, you know, for them might be moving in the right direction, but it's just a really tough situation to be put in there.
Yeah. Is there a breakout player for this team that makes sense to you?
I really like Zay Jones coming out of college, but I'm going to throw a more under-the-radar name out there and say Logan Thomas, the tight end,
former
NFL quarterback. When he was coming out of Virginia Tech, actually was looking at his measurables, looking at his athleticism, and thought it made sense for him to convert to tight end right away. Mm-hmm. And I remember, I believe it was his father who tweeted at me who said that that would never happen. So... it did. It just took a few years. But I think that that's kind of an intriguing prospect for them. And, you know, tight ends can be a little bit difficult to find at times, those those high-impact guys. Sometimes you have to go for the former basketball players or whatever. But Thomas supposedly is doing well in training camp. He's got a few passes during the preseason. So I'm very interested to watch him. And I could see him being a guy, since he played college football with Tyrod Taylor, as someone who could potentially break out.
Yeah, I mean, it's not out of the question. Like, it's worth a flyer, by all means, to give him a shot. It's not as if, you know, Charles Clay has some knee issues. He's not 100%. Like, as a red zone weapon, there are worse things to try if you're the Bills. I'm going to say Shaq Lawson, who pretty much missed his entire rookie season with injury. He came back, but he wasn't his normal self, wasn't playing a ton of snaps, so pretty limited, but a guy who really excelled his final year at school and someone who was very impactful at Clemson. So if he can step up and be a second pass rusher next to Jerry Hughes and next to Marshall Darius on the interior, I mean, that could really fundamentally change what they can do on defense and really help out a secondary that's certainly in transition given the changes they've made this offseason. I would love it for the Bills to be good. I think they're a fun team when they're doing well. It's a fun crowd. I want the Bills to succeed. It's been too long, but I don't think this is the year. I think they're in a rebuild, and so I think they're going to finish 6-10 is my estimate for this year.
I was actually going to say the exact same thing, 6-10.
Yes.
That's a figure that makes sense to me.
I feel more confident about it now. Football Power Index says 6.7 wins, the fifth toughest schedule in football. So I think they're on board with this pretty much. I was going to say a little better, but I could see it thing where maybe Taylor gets benched during the season because they want to try Peterman out. A team that did not disappoint last year, a team that was quite impressive, especially in close games, for the Miami Dolphins, who had a couple of good games early in the year and losses against the Seahawks and I think the Patriots as well, if I'm not mistaken. But then went on a very hot streak against some very bad football teams and finished the year 10-6, made the postseason with a 7.6 win Pythagorean expectation, 8-2 in one score games. And so you would figure, thinking about their what happened to them last year, they lost Ryan Tannehill late in the season. They were without Rashad Jones, their best safety, for most of the year. You would figure, okay, we're getting those guys back. We are getting Mike Pouncey, our center back, who missed most of the year with injuries themselves. You would think they have a shot at improving. I mean, are you on board with the Dolphins taking another step forward, even with Jay Cutler replacing Ryan Tannehill here in 2017?
I don't think they'll take another step forward. I think that they'll pretty much stay where they were last year. I think that the Tannehill injury, I don't know how much it hurt them. I've been basically saying that their upside is about the same with either Tannehill or Cutler, just based on how Cutler did play under Adam Gase.
Sure.
But their floor is much, much lower without Tannehill because if Cutler plays like he did last year, if Cutler bottoms out, then this is a team who could finish in that 6-10 range. I think that Cutler could really drag them down that far, but they do still have the upside of being as good as they were last year and as being as good as they were with Tannehill there at quarterback.
Yeah, it does. I'm kind of upset I don't have an Adam Gase in my life to sort of like make me look as good as Jay Cutler looks around Adam Gase. Like, I really just wish I had someone who was like, oh, you saw a Bill with Adam Gase? Oh, he's so much better with Adam Gase around. Like, and I just, you know, don't have that offensive coordinator to work with. Yeah, it's frustrating. I'm going to say this about Jay Cutler. Like, I'm someone who I think I've been more positive about Cutler than most other people over the course of his career. I don't know that I'm thrilled about Jay Cutler with Adam Gase. I guess he was better last year with Gase in 2015 for sure. No one's arguing that. But, like, this was a guy who nobody else in the league wanted 6 months ago, who retired to become a broadcaster. And maybe he had an offer for the minimum somewhere. But, like, teams who had openings were not looking at Jay Cutler as a viable starter. He was someone who the league did not want. And so it's hard for me to believe that he is suddenly like a very viable quarterback relative to maybe where he was last year. And I think the concern for me is necessarily that, you know, the weapons are there. Obviously, they have a great group of weapons. I ranked them second or third, I believe, in the weapon rankings, which got people very angry. But three great receivers, three very useful receivers in Kenny Stills, Devontae Parker, and Jarvis Landry. Parker looks great in the preseason, by the way. They added Julius Thomas, who, even if he's not the guy he was in Denver, is an upgrade at tight end in terms of the receiving options. And then Jay Ajayi was very impressive last year. So you can imagine there's plenty of guys to throw to. I'm concerned about the offensive line, especially on the interior. Even if Pouncey comes back, I think that the guard situation there is just a huge mess in terms of injuries and just guys who are not really all that good.
Yeah, it's on Cutler, just to start off, I'm not ever very high on Ryan Tannehill, which is why I think the drop-off just won't be there. I don't expect Jay Cutler to be a top 10 quarterback, maybe somewhere in the 10 to 20 range, but that's pretty much where I put Tannehill before that. Anyway, so I just I'm not the biggest Tannehill guy. I'm definitely not the biggest Cutler guy, but I think that he can at least kind of perhaps replicate what he did in 2015 with Adam Gase. Mm-hmm. I think that there is, like I said, a big chance for a complete disaster from Cutler, but clearly Gase thinks otherwise. The interior offensive line is definitely a mess there. It does all kind of depend on, you know, how healthy Pouncey can be. Mm-hmm. Otherwise on that team, I do like it though. I mean, I do see why there's the chance that they could take a step forward this season. And I kind of liked what they did over the off season. I know that, you were not the biggest fan of the Kiko Alonso signing, which I can certainly understand, but you know, I like when teams don't pull the Jaguars move or something that I believe that the Dolphins have done in the past, mm-hmm. which is sign a high-priced free agent from another team and mm-hmm. throw a boatload of money at them, and then that player just doesn't work out. So I like the fact that they re-signed their own guys. They didn't make any huge splash signings. They kind of took, you know, what used to be the Patriots approach on that one. It's not the case anymore, apparently, with Stephon Gilmore coming in this season. But, you know, spending a little bit more wisely, and maybe the Alonso money isn't wise, but at least it's bringing back your own guy who's been in the system, who might be able to, you know, even improve a little bit knowing the system coming into his second year. So overall, I liked what they did in the offseason. So, you know, just as a football fan, I was a little bit disappointed in the Tannehill injury just because I thought that they were moving in the right direction. Like I said, I don't think the Cutler hurts that much, but it does throw a wrench in things a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I'm not necessarily disagreeing with the players they signed. I think it makes sense to bring back Kiko Alonso if he looked impressive last year, and he was fine last year. I think he had touches where he looked pretty good. But the money is a little much for me in terms of some of the guys. Like Andre Branch, Andre Branch getting twice as much in guaranteed money as Jabal Sheard doesn't really make that much sense to me. Giving Lawrence Timmons 2 years of fully guaranteed money, I have issues with that. But in terms of, like, that doesn't really matter right now. What matters right now is the roster construction. And it's certainly reasonable to think the defense could be good this year. I mean, they upgraded at some spots where they were weak. The linebacker might be a problem. Of course, they lost Raekwon McMillan for the year already with a torn ACL, who was their second-round pick, who was going to start in the interior. Koa Misi might not ever play again. So they signed Ray Maaluga as, like, a veteran depth guy. But you would think they might have some options at linebacker. And the secondary, it could be good. I mean, Rashad Jones is coming back after being hurt. They signed TJ McDonald, who's suspended for a chunk of the year, but he was pretty good for the Rams and signed to a very cheap one-year deal. A lot of young cornerbacks there with Xavien Howard, their second-round pick last year, who was pretty good in a relatively small sample. Or Cordarrelle Tankersley, they took in the third round this year. So there are options here. Like you could imagine a situation where it works out. But then at the same time, I'm looking at them and I think, okay, well, you know, Cameron Wake is 35 years old and looked great coming off of a torn Achilles last year, but he's also still 35 years old. How much more productive can he be than last year when he was, you know, a comeback player of the year candidate? Ndamukong Suh was great, but like how much more can they get out of Suh than they got out of him last year? Byron Maxwell was terrible for 2 weeks and then great from that point forward. How is he going to be a number one cornerback again when he hasn't been that guy for most of his career? Like I feel like they've kind of plugged some holes, but I just don't know that the guys who were really good last year can necessarily be counted on to be quite as effective in terms of staying healthy and in terms of staying effective in 2017.
Yeah, I agree with that, especially, you know, as far as Cameron Wake goes, just at some point that's going to drop off. At some point that talent level is going to drop off a cliff. I will say that just the fact that they aren't going to trot Mario Williams out there for 16 games this season is kind of an improvement in itself. Yeah. Sure. Whoever else is on the field will be a little bit better, but no, I mean, I think that there's always concerns with Byron Maxwell. I'm not sure, you know, he's so inconsistent that you never completely know what you're getting there. Mm-hmm. I'm probably a bigger fan of Altron Werner than some people are. I think that he can be a decent, you know, slot guy, decent nickel guy in there. But, I mean, there's certainly obvious holes. And the fact that you have to sign Ray Maaluga off the street is not an ideal situation. That's a guy who I've kind of been wondering how he's still been in the NFL for what seems like 10 years now. I know it's not been that long, but he's always been kind of that slow plodding linebacker. And the fact that now he's getting a chance with another team is kind of surprising in itself.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, this is a team that now also they're benching Jordan Phillips. They're promoting Devon Godshaw to be a rookie fifth-round pick starter next to Dominic Sue on the defensive line. Charles Harris, the first-round pick, is probably not going to play very much this year. So, I mean, it's an interesting team. And I think it's not crazy to imagine a situation where they are really good, where like everything comes together. There's enough top-level talent on this team that things could work out. But we're already seeing the injuries being a concern. There are a lot of guys on this roster who have a history of getting hurt, where it's tough to imagine them really getting healthier. And on top of that, their schedule is getting much tougher. I had their schedule in 2016 as the 25th toughest in all football, so pretty easy. And they won, I think, 9 games against teams who did not make the playoffs. They had 1 win against the Steelers. The stat I had in my mind was against teams who were 500 or better, they were 1-5. They had an impressive win against the Steelers and then 5 losses otherwise. So a lot of wins against teams were really not very good last year. And this year, the second toughest schedule in all of football. So that's another one of my concerns there. Do you have a breakout player for this team?
I feel like we might have the same guy here, but Devontae Parker is my breakout candidate. Yeah. And, you know, I question whether that even completely counted because he's been in the league for a while, but he hasn't had that 1,000-yard season yet. I think that he finally breaks that barrier this year and is the guy that the Dolphins thought they were drafting in 2015.
The other wide receiver we haven't talked about very much is Jarvis Landry, who's entering the final year of his contract. Do you think it makes sense for Miami to give him maybe like $11 or $12 million a year, given that he, you know, is pretty much just a slot receiver?
Yeah, that's so tough. I think that does kind of depend on how Parker and Stills look this year, because if they can be, you know, that legit number one and number two, then perhaps you don't need the $11 or $12 million slot receiver in there as well. Mm-hmm. I think that's a role that you can kind of fill on the cheap, and I think that someone else would be willing to pay Jarvis Landry that amount of money to be that slot receiver possession guy. So I probably wouldn't, but I mean, I do like Jarvis Landry's game. I don't know. I can't really imagine paying him that much when, I mean, what's Julian Edelman making with the Patriots? Like $4 or $5 million. Obviously that's a different situation since he's willing to take a pay cut with the Patriots, but you can find those guys out there on the cheap.
Yeah. I kind of see both sides of it. You know, I think he's better than that most examples of that type of player, but you know, you can't really, if you're going to pay your third wideout, Kenny Stills $8 million a year, which I have issues with, but I can understand why it's a reasonable risk at the very least. And then you're paying your slot receiver $11 million a year, and your third receiver is a first round pick who's going to have to get paid in a couple of years as well. Like, it's, you can't spend you're in like 30% of your salary cap money on wide receivers. It's just not feasible. So yeah, I think at some point they're going to have to make a tough decision, and they might've made it already given the fact that they haven't gone out and signed him. I think the schedule is going to be part of this. I think that they're going to be about as good as they were a year ago, but maybe not quite as lucky in terms of those close games. So I have them at 7-9. So not really competing for a playoff spot this year.
I had them at 8-8. So I guess I'm a little bit more optimistic about how they'll perform, but I can certainly understand the schedule issues. I just that's more to do with me just kind of liking what they did over the offseason and trying to bring back as many pieces as possible.
I mean, it's defensible. Like, I think again, the money, the contracts themselves have issues for me, but the logic in bringing back a lot of those guys does make sense to me. We're going to get to one really good football team, and then one team that's maybe not quite as good as another football team after the break. We'll be back with more Bill Barnwell Show in a second. But first, guys, football season's back, and you've been waiting for it since February 6th. But now we're here. Football's coming. And you know what happens during football season? You play daily fantasy football. And you can do that with Daily King's 1 week fantasy football. And this year, they are not only hosting a $100,000 contest that's free to enter for week one, if you draft the perfect lineup, and this is not a typo. I say plenty of dumb things and get things wrong during ad reads. This is not one of them. If you draft the perfect lineup, you can win $1 billion. Not $1 million, not $100 million, $1 billion with the perfect lineup. So if you don't know DraftKings, of course, there's many ways to play. You can play public contests with big cash prizes or private contests versus a group of your friends. There's beginner and casual contests. You can play against people who have similar skill levels to you. And of course, daily fantasy football with DraftKings, you get to draft a new team every week without any commitment whatsoever. And this week, you have a chance for free to play for $1 billion. That's a good ratio. It's a good percentage. I don't think you're going to win $1 billion. I'm not going to win $1 billion. I'm not good at it. But if you draft the perfect lineup, you can win $1 billion and play for free with my promo code in week one, which is Barnwell, B-A-R-N-W-E-L-L. Go to DraftKings.com now. Use my promo code Barnwell to play in DraftKings' free week one contest with $100,000 in total prizes. And again, if you draft the perfect lineup, $1 billion. Eligibility restrictions apply, and see DraftKings.com for details. Guys, I've got some interesting facts for you here from the folks at Gillette. Did you know the tip of a Gillette razor blade is measured on an atomic scale? That means their blade edges are thinner than a single brain cell. And that precision, of course, is the work of many brain cells. The hundreds of members of Gillette's research and development team have spent over 4,700 years combined working to make your shave closer and more comfortable. That's longer than the Egyptian pyramids have been around. And while over 1,000, craftsmen and women in Boston are busy making your blades, another team is putting your blades through more than 60 extremely strict and precise quality checks. They fail just one of these tests, it does not leave the factory. In other words, the hardworking people at Gillette never stop working to make your blades better. And now, that includes the price tag, because you can get your Gillette blades at their lowest prices in years. See for yourself at GilletteOnDemand.com. Gillette, the best a man can get. Pricing applies to select products and is at the sole discretion of the retailer. Welcome back to the Bill Barnwell Show. I'm Bill Barnwell of ESPN. I'm joined by Doug Kite of Nesson to talk about the AFC East. And let's get to a team that I think most people are going to pick as the favorites to win this division for what feels like the 73rd season in a row. A team that is literally reconstructing their stadium to install new banners because they have run out of banner space. The New England Patriots, who the talk before this year is that they're going to go 16-0. So let's start with that. Are the Patriots going to go 16-0 this season?
I think that there's a 15% chance that they go 16-0. That's it. Completely arbitrary number that I came up with weeks ago, but nothing has changed my mind since. So I will go with a 15% chance that they will go 16-0.
Wow. What do you think has to happen besides them winning all 16 games? What do you think is the unlikeliest element? Is it just that they're not going to slip on a banana peel? Is there something about the team that has to go really well or stay really healthy that you're questioning? What do you think that
is? It's the injuries. They have to stay as healthy as they did last season. Because, I mean, they stayed pretty much as healthy as humanly possible last year, went 14-2, won the Super Bowl, did all that. I think that I wouldn't say drastically improved their roster, but they've certainly improved their roster since last year. So if they were good enough to go 14-2 last year, I think that, 15-1, 16-0, that's kind of the natural progression of things. But they do have to stay just as healthy this season. I'm not sure, injuries are so tough to predict, but they did have a new strength and conditioning coach last year in Moses Cabrera. And I think that did help to a certain extent because in the seasons previously, they had some pretty major issues with injuries and they made the switch. They were a lot luckier. They were a lot more fortunate last year. We'll see if that continues, but yeah, if they can stay healthy, if they can stay as healthy as they did last year, then I really don't think that 16-0 is out of the realm of possibility. I think it's in the conversation.
Yeah, I mean, and you're saying they were healthy last year, and they were, but the one guy who wasn't healthy for most of last season was Rob Gronkowski, who missed a good chunk of the year. And so now you're thinking maybe, okay, we get Gronk back, and he's always an injury risk, but, it's plausible that he could play all 16 games. He is not drinking beer anymore, which seems almost impossible to fathom. But, he missed half the year last season. If he comes back and he plays 14 games, that could be another leap forward for this team because they're a different team to some extent with him on the roster. Are you surprised they're playing him during the preseason this year after not playing him in the preseason for most of the last 4 years, I think?
It's a confusing approach, but I don't mind it just because, okay, so he hasn't played in a preseason game since 2012. How has that worked out for them? He keeps getting hurt. He keeps getting injured. So maybe taking some bumps during the preseason can help. Like I said, it is kind of a strange approach since he had the back surgery. But, after he had the back surgery and when they knew that the back surgery was coming, there was, the time frame for his return could have put him back for the Super Bowl. They decided ultimately to place him on injured reserve, which eliminated any chances of that. But he's been healthy for a really long time now. He was healthy enough to shoulder tackle Jinder Mahal during WrestleMania. Mm-hmm. He was healthy enough to participate all through the spring, all through the summer. So he's pretty much as healthy as he's been in any offseason so far. He's working with Tom Brady's body coach guru guy, Alex Guerrero, which, you know, I'm not sure how much Guerrero can really help out a guy like Rob Gronkowski, because mm-hmm. the tight end has to lift weights, whereas Tom Brady does not. So I think a lot of that is just Rob Gronkowski doing, you know, the stretching, eating the TB12 method, eating the TB12 meals, doing all of that to possibly help his recovery. But, I mean, I don't know. It's a different approach, but I don't hate it. And there's a lot of incentives for Rob Gronkowski to stay healthy this year built into his contract. So I think that he probably doesn't mind doing things a little bit differently this offseason to possibly ensure that he does stay healthy this season.
Mm-hmm. Now, it seems like the biggest concern, if you're thinking about what might go wrong with the Patriots, what their biggest weakness might be, is the defensive line, specifically at defensive end. Is that fair to say?
Yes, it's definitely fair to say, because so basically the only consistent option that they have there is Trey Flowers, or really the only dependable option. And Trey Flowers did break out in a big way last year. Lots of sacks in the second half of the season, sacks in the Super Bowl. But even with Trey Flowers, I feel like we have to take a small step back, because he wasn't getting a ton of pressure post-snap last year. He's getting a lot of sacks, and sacks are obviously a very, very impactful play. There's a much higher chance that the offense will fail if they're sacked on a given drive. But I think that Flowers has to bring pressure on a little bit more of a consistent basis this season. And he's definitely that number one guy this year. Other than that, they've got Coney Ealy, who's reportedly on the trade block. I don't think that he's a stone-cold lock to even make the roster based on what we've seen so far. Beyond that, they've got Dietrich Wise, who was a fourth-round pick. Geno Grissom, who was cut out of training camp last year as a second-round player after being a third-round pick. And then some linebackers, Harvey Longy, who's an undrafted free agent, Dante Hightower, who it seems like they will move to the edge this year, which I like, but he's been their most consistent pass rusher, mostly as a blitzer. And we were talking to Bill Belichick this week, and he basically said that blitzing up the middle versus rushing off the edge, you're in a completely different world based on who you're going up against, the situation you're going up against, having to curve around the edge. So we'll kind of have to wait and see to see how effective Dante Hightower really even is in that role this season. But yeah, that's a major question mark about even who's going to be a pass rusher on this team, and depending who it is, how effective they'll be.
Yeah. Do you think, given the Patriots' propensity for trades early on in the season, could you see a possible trade for a pass rusher in their future?
Yeah, definitely. Either before training camp is over, or, you know, by that trade deadline, I definitely expect a pass rusher to come in. And I think it's a tough position to trade for, because everyone's looking for pass rushers. Everyone wants their pass rushers to stay on their team. No team can have enough pass rushers. So I feel like to even get a player who could contribute as a rotational fourth option, the Patriots might have to, you know, give up something in return, something valuable in return. I don't think that you're looking at a situation where you're acquiring Kyle Van Noy for a swap of picks. I think that, you know, acquiring a linebacker is a lot easier than a pass rusher, but I think that they'll certainly try. I would certainly expect someone to come in before that trade deadline, but I don't see it being a huge name. I think that at least to start the season, they're definitely going to have to try to use those linebackers as pass rushers. And you could have worse options. I mean, Kyle Van Noy was a double-digit sack guy in college. Shane McClellan was a highly sought-after pass rusher when he was coming out of college. Jonte Hightower's done a lot off the edge in his past. So there are certainly some bodies there at linebacker, but they're also, you know, not ideal to be rushing off the edge.
Yeah, and I mean, if you think about the Patriots as a team that it's unfair to say they have the division locked up, I mean, they have a 93.6% chance of winning the division per the Football Power Index. You know, it's not really about them getting sacks in September. It's about them getting sacks in January. So maybe they, you know, it's not crazy to imagine they could go after someone like Dwight Freeney and say, okay, we want you to be ready for January, and we're going to, you know, kind of build you up slowly during the season. So I guess we'll see what happens after final cut. But yeah, that seems like it's the only real question mark for me in this roster, because you know, they're pretty great elsewhere, everywhere else. I mean, I can't imagine a situation where, you know, one injury is going to really impact them. They're so deep at wide receiver. They are very deep in the secondary. They have plenty of running backs. They have an offensive line that was very effective last year as Dante Scarnecchia returned from retirement. And God forbid, you know, if Tom Brady got hurt, you have Jimmy Garoppolo there, who is certainly looked very promising in his couple weeks as a starter last year. So I guess I would say at this point, like what if the Patriots go 10-6 this year, what happened? What went wrong?
I think injuries at the tackles. That would be the biggest thing. And this is something that, you know, spoiled Patriots fans, people have actually begun to panic a little bit about the Patriots' depth at offensive tackle, which I do think is very funny because there are players of the caliber of Cameron Fleming or Adrian Waddle who are, you know, probably starting around the NFL. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that they're starting caliber players, but you could certainly do worse than having those guys as your backup tackles. But if Nate Solder went down and if Marcus Cannon went down, they don't have Sebastian Vollmer anymore. And that would mean turning to either Fleming or Waddle because both of them are not making this roster, plus Antonio Garcia, who's a third-round pick, mm-hmm. who has barely even played this summer. He's been limited in training camp. He has not seen preseason action. I think that that's not a great situation there because I think that he's talented enough that he potentially could have either been that extra tight end that they throw in at times, that, mm-hmm. that third swing offensive tackle, but he just has not been healthy enough to be on the field. So he has not progressed as they hoped. So I think that that would be it. That's really the only major glaring area where they don't have that depth that they do at the other positions, like receiver, like running back, like tight end, like in the secondary, even like at linebacker in the defensive line. And I guess you could probably say that for any team. If any team lost their either one or two of their starting offensive tackles, they're probably going to drop quite a bit in the win column. So I think that's probably the biggest depth area of weakness. But even then, I mean, Cameron Fleming started a game at left tackle last season, and he didn't look that bad. So, yeah. You know, you could certainly do worse. It's not anything where the sky is falling or anything, but it would definitely hurt if Solder went down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, think about Marcus Cannon. Until last year, he was a nightmare in a lot of ways. Patriots fans really did not think very highly of him, and then he was a great right tackle after Scarnecchia came back out of nowhere. So, you know, you would have thought that was a concern maybe last year with Sebastian Vollmer going down before the season, but Cannon ended up being one of the best right tackles in all of football. It's almost like the Patriots are kind of a boring team to talk about because we know they're going to be good. It's like it's hardly a discussion. It's just a question of like we're waiting until January with them. We're waiting to see what happens with them in the playoffs, who they match up against, and really if they can stay healthy up to that point. Do you have a breakout player for people you want to recommend?
Yeah, this was a tough one just because like I'm so close to the team that almost every player seems like he's been blown up to the proportion of everyone thinking that he's going to be a breakout player already. But I would say Rex Burkhead, just because of how good he looked in that second preseason game. And I think that there's at least the potential that he could be the Patriots' starting running back this season. He could lead the team in touches just because Mike Gillisley has been hampered with a hamstring injury. We haven't seen him in the preseason yet. We'll likely see him Friday night. But I think that Burkhead could either be that Danny Woodhead type from a few years ago where he's just as effective carrying the ball as he is in the passing game, or he could be their starting running back this season and gets 150 carries and, you know, 40 or 50 catches, and he could really be entering another contract year as a highly sought-after running back. I think that there's a lot of talent there. He just has to stay healthy.
Do you think Bill Belichick is signing 6 running backs to try and mess with fantasy football players?
Yes. I think that he hates all fantasy owners and he wants to make it as big of a nightmare as humanly possible. It is funny that they'll probably keep 4 starting caliber running backs on the roster this season. It's a nightmare for all fantasy players.
And play them. They're going to play a bunch too. It's not they're going to like just use one guy. So it's crazy to think that, you know, you can't really pick any of them in fantasy football. Very frustrating. I'm going to say Trey Flowers, who probably has already broken out to some extent, but I think that people are going to realize how good he was over the second half of last season. He could be a double-digit sack guy this year. It's hardly out of the question given how frequently he's going to play and how many how many times the Patriots are going to be, you know, up in the fourth quarter, and they're going to be going up against, you know, teams desperate to throw the football. So he had 7 sacks last year, 14 knockdowns. So I see him being taking the leap forward this year. I'm predicting their record. I'm going to say 14-2. I think they lose a game halfway through the year, and then maybe they get to chill week 17, having already clinched the top seed in the AFC. So I'm going to say 14-2. 16-0 is not out of the question by any means. They're playing the Jets in week 17, actually, so I may take that back in terms of taking maybe not win, losing in week 17. I think the Patriots' backups could probably beat the Jets, but I'm going to say 14-2. Where do you have them in terms of their final record?
I think that's probably the smart answer, but I'm going to go with 15-1. Just, you know, another one game improvement over last year, and I know that we'll get to the Jets in a second, but if that's 15-0 against 0-15, that's going to be the greatest game of all time.
That could be so great
in week 17
on New Year's Eve. That would be so much fun.
Yep.
Do you who do you think the loss will be to? If you're going to say 15-1, who do they lose to?
I guess I'll say the Steelers. That could be a tough game in December in Pittsburgh. You know, we've seen the stats that Ben Roethlisberger is significantly better at home than he is on the road. They did not have to play Roethlisberger in Pittsburgh last year, so yeah, it could be a tough game for them.
Yeah, and that's at the end of a 6-week stretch with 5 road games in 6 weeks. So that's a pretty brutal run for the Patriots there. I'm going to say this. I don't believe it, but I'm going to just bring it up anyway. 2008, if I was recording this podcast with you, we were both, I think, not too young to do podcasts at that point, but we were recording a podcast. We would have been talking about how the Patriots were guaranteed to win the division. They were coming off a perfect season. They just lost in the Super Bowl. They were phenomenal. The 2007 Miami Dolphins were 1-15 the year before. No reason to think they were going to be a good football team. You know what happened? The Patriots lost Tom Brady in week one. The Dolphins improved drastically. They won the division after going 1-15, and the Patriots had gone 16 in the previous year. I don't think the Jets are going to win the division this year, but there is a 0.2% chance of it happening for the Football Power Index. So what would have to happen for the Jets to win the division in 2017?
I think that Christian Hackenberg would have to be the Tom Brady of 2001, right? Mm-hmm. You'd have to have Josh McCown injured in week 2, week 3, something like that, and have his kidneys lacerated or whatever happened to Drew Bledsoe, and then Christian Hackenberg or Bryce Petty or one of those guys would just have to become Tom Brady all of a sudden, which there's probably less than a 0.2 chance of that happening.
Yes.
But that's, I think, what would, how about this? They would have to sign, maybe just sign Tim Tebow, and Tim Tebow brings them to glory as their starting quarterback.
Tim Tebow as the new Deion Sanders playing for the Jets and the Mets in New York, just running from game to game. That would be, I think ESPN would shut down. I think it'd be too much traffic. I think the website wouldn't work anymore. Yeah, I mean, this is a team that has a plan, and in the long term, I think it makes sense what they're doing. They traded down a bunch this year. They are rebuilding. They realize that the roster they had last year was not going to compete. It was probably a little bit lucky in 2015 in terms of how they performed. You would expect them to decline. They were bad. And they got rid of a bunch of starters. Pretty much anyone that wasn't tied down to a long-term contract was released. And now they are basically just shifting through guys. And I don't think the defense is necessarily going to be bad. I could see the defense being totally fine. But that offense, it is terrifying. I mean, it's one thing to have, like, that the year when Tom Brady had no receivers and it was, you know, him throwing to Rashay Caldwell and Doug Gabriel and guys, you know, who basically off the street. It's like, okay, well, you still have Tom Brady. You still have a bunch of decent tight ends. Your offensive line is okay. Like, your offense is going to be functional. This is maybe the worst quarterback situation in football. It is the worst quarterback situation in football. Throwing to by far the worst receiving core in all of football. It's terrifying to think how bad this passing game could be.
Yeah, it's going to be a complete disaster. This is like 1992 Seahawks has that written all over it. Mm-hmm. It's definitely the worst quarterback situation for 2017.
Yeah.
I would say that maybe as far as the future goes, the Jaguars are up there. because at least like there's like a tiny little glimmer of hope that Christian Hackenberg could be something in the future, whereas the Jaguars basically have no hope whatsoever on their quarterback depth chart.
Sure.
But no, I just have absolutely no idea how the Jets are going to move the ball through the air this year. I think that Bryce Petty stinks. I think that Josh McCown is going to get hurt probably in week one.
Yeah.
If he doesn't get hurt in the preseason.
Mm-hmm.
I think that Christian Hackenberg was a disaster for them last year. The fact that they couldn't even get him on the field despite everyone else that they threw out there.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, their wide receiver situation is pretty much insane. They've got two Patriots retreads on their roster and Chris Harper and Kembrell Tompkins. And there's almost nothing beyond that. I mean, I don't know who's going to be the leading wide receiver on this team. Jalen Marshall, maybe? Chad Hansen, the rookie, maybe? I have no idea who's going to catch the ball, and whoever's at quarterback is probably going to have a hard time throwing it to them anyway. I have a question for you, though.
Okay.
Obviously, the Jets do have a plan in place.
Sure.
Whose plan is it, though? Is it Mike Maccagnan? Is he going to last beyond this rebuild? Or whose plan is this?
Yeah, I mean, you would assume that it's not Todd Bowles' plan because the head coach is always first to go. So I can't imagine people are unrealistic about the talent available to Todd Bowles, at least on the outside. Like, if you're a Jets fan, I think it's not like you're going to sit there at the end of the year and be like, oh, our head coach cost us four games. We should have been 5-11 instead of 1-15 because Todd Bowles screwed things up. I think that would be unrealistic. But if you're Mike Maccagnan, you're probably going to fire Todd Bowles as your sort of like your get the attention off me card for the time being.
Yep.
I think with Maccagnan, before the season, it's the right thing to do, certainly, is to rebuild the roster. And I would assume he went to ownership and said, hey, we can't win with this roster, so we have to rebuild, and I need you guys to, you know, not fire me after this year, no matter how bad it goes. And GMs do stuff like that, and it could work. I mean, he could keep his job because of it, but it does seem more likely that after this year, everyone's going to go. It's an interesting question. Because there's moral hazard, where you have general managers and coaches who make decisions based on the short term and keeping their job as opposed to the best long term thing for the franchise. Jared Goff, I think, is a good example with the Rams last year, where you and Jeff Fisher, you know, trade everything for a young quarterback because his team was so mediocre that, you know, he could maybe justify keeping his job by having to develop this young quarterback who was going to take time. Of course, it didn't work out that way. I can't fault what he did. Like, I this offseason, I thought the moves they made once they decided on this plan have been totally reasonable. I just don't. I would have liked to have seen some semblance of hope at receiver at the very least. Like, it's hard to imagine, even with Christian Hackenberg there, even though he's probably bad, it's hard to imagine them getting a real, genuine read into what he can be, given how bad the receiving core is.
Yeah, and the Quincy Enunwa injury was brutal for them. After giving up everyone else that they had last year, and then him going down for the season was just like it was the nail in the coffin for any hope that Christian Hackenberg could produce any semblance of good stats this season. Really, I mean, Enunwa, I had high hopes for him, kind mm-hmm. of as the number one receiver there. I thought that he was very good against the Patriots last year. He burned Malcolm Butler in one game, and I thought that he had that potential to be that big-bodied Brandon Marshall type, not as talented, mm-hmm. but in that same mold. And once he went down, it was just, all right, this is a completely lost season. And it is kind of unfortunate for Hackenberg, because I think that, you know, if he does play really terribly this season,
mm-hmm.
I don't think he will get a second chance with the Jets next season. And like you said, it's just not really fair for him based on who the weapons are there at wide receiver. I don't think that they'll get a good read on him.
Yeah, I do think it's hard to imagine the passing game being good enough for him to get a second chance. And it does make sense for them to go after a quarterback next year if you're assuming they're going to have a top three pick, which I think most people do. It is a draft that's very deep in quarterbacks. If you're going to tank, this is the year to do it, given the possibilities of what it seems like is going to be coming out in next year's draft. But again, this is a team that they didn't tank for Peyton Manning, but they were the worst team in the league in a year where they expected Peyton Manning to come out in the draft, and it turned out he did not come out in the draft that year, and it totally changed the course of two franchises for a decade to come. I will say, you know, we can certainly make fun of the offense, and it probably deserves to be made fun of given what little money and what little effort there's been put into building it, but I see the defense being totally fine. I mean, the big problem with this defense last year was the secondary, and they've invested pretty heavily. Darrell Revis is gone. They went out and signed Morris Claiborne, who was pretty useful in Dallas last year, and then spent their top two picks on safeties and Jamal Adams and Marcus May, who, you know, safeties can be tricky early in their careers, but there's certainly plenty of talent in the secondary versus what had been there last year, and given how quickly some of the guys in last year's secondary seemed to age.
The Jets also have Daryl Roberts, who was a seventh-round pick by the Patriots in 2015, and he was in a crowded young group of young cornerbacks last training camp for the Patriots. The Patriots ultimately decided to keep Jonathan Jones for his special teams ability, but they also had Cravon LeBlanc, who had a really good rookie season with the Bears last year, and Daryl Roberts, who that was decent for the Jets last year, pretty good in the preseason this year. I was actually talking to a scout today who was pretty impressed with his game and thinks that he could kind of be something in the NFL. So he's another guy in that mix who is a young, talented player, good athlete, who could contribute for them this year.
Yeah. I mean, this is what they should be doing this year, by all means, is you got to try and find guys who are going to contribute over the next three or four seasons. So, you got to be cycling guys in and out. You have to be giving players who, you know, are on useful teams but couldn't maybe make the roster a shot, because you're not going to be, you know, paying a premium for mediocre guys from other teams. Just isn't going to work right now. They have to give younger, cheaper players a shot to hope that they're going to be, you know, useful players in this team in the years to come. So, I those are the guys that make sense to me in terms of players they should be giving more opportunities to. And if it works out, you know, all the better. But if it doesn't work out, then they have a bunch of draft picks coming over the next couple of years that should be able to really help them out in the years to come. I'm trying to find a breakout player on the roster. I would say maybe Jalen Marshall, who I believe led the preseason in receiving last year. But, like, I can't tell you the 10 guys who led the league in preseason receiving the years before and if they returned in anything. So I'm just going to throw that one out there as, like, someone has to get yardage for this team somehow.
I was going to cheat and say Jamal Adams, but I will not take the easy way out, and I will lean on my fandom for the Washington Huskies, my Huskies fanboyness, and say sure. Austin Seferian Jenkins. He has not done much in his career so far, but lost a lot of weight. It seems like he is off of alcohol completely at this point, which is good for him. And if all things go right for him, someone has to catch passes in that offense. And the guy who's 6'6" and a freak athlete is, I guess, as good a bet as anyone.
Yeah, I mean, that's totally plausible. Jalen Marshall's out the first four games of the year. He's suspended, but I still, like, someone has to do it, so why not him? Why not anybody? Why not Austin Seferian Jenkins? Anything is possible with the Jets except them being good. Let me finish with this. Do you think, you know what you think the chances of the Patriots going 16-0 are? Is it more likely the Patriots go 16-0 or the Jets go 0-16?
I think it's more likely the Jets go 0-16. I will actually say 0-16 as my prediction for the Jets.
Wow.
I think this team is terrible.
Wow.
I have a question for you, though, real quick, before we get off the Jets. If, by some chance, the Patriots decided to waive Jacoby Brissett, try to get him through waivers and onto their practice squad, do you think the Jets would drop Bryce Petty, pick up Jacoby Brissett to be, no pun intended, Petty, and pick up the Patriots' number three quarterback?
Why not? Why not? Like, if you're not going to win, you might as well be antagonistic. You might as well be a heel, control. I think that you'll win some of your fans over if you're doing that. And honestly, we've seen Bryce Petty. You had some very negative things to say about Bryce Petty earlier in the show. I would mean, Jacoby Brissett, I don't think he's great, but it's worth a shot. I mean, they should be looking at guys who are hitting the waiver wire as possible options. They should be very active as the season goes on in terms of going after guys on the practice squad, going after guys who look good in the preseason. They shouldn't be precious about the roster they've constructed, because if they can find two or three guys this year who are cheap players, who are effective, and who they can sign for the long term, like, that's a good season for them. I don't think that, you know, they have to necessarily win a bunch of games to be successful. I don't think they're going to go 0-16. they host the Jaguars. They're at the Browns. I mean, The schedule is hard. They have the fourth, I believe, toughest schedule in all football, but it's hard for me to believe they're not going to win one of those two games, then win one game randomly against the Dolphins or the Bills or the Bucks or, you know, someone. I'm going to say they go 2-14, which is my lowest prediction of all football. I do believe they have the first overall pick next year in the draft, so there are brighter times ahead, but for now, this is going to be a pretty brutal season for Jets fans.
Yeah, well, and we'll be on Sam Darnold watch for the Jets this whole year and see if he's actually going to be willing to come out of college to play for the Jets if they do have that number one pick. So that will be that would really be another slap in the face for the Jets if they lost that quarterback again.
Yeah, that'd be even more upsetting. But strange, you know, it's happened before, so I don't think you just can count on him coming back for sure. Doug, where can people check out more of what you're working on?
You can follow me on Twitter at Doug Kied. That's K-Y-E-D. Go to Nesson.com for all of our Patriots coverage. YouTube.com/Nesson for a bunch of videos and podcasts and all that stuff. And follow me on Instagram while you're at it, too, at Doug Kied, same as Twitter.
Very good dog and cat content on your Instagram.
Yes. Yeah. And yeah.
Several recurring features on your Instagram I'm very big fan of. I'll just leave it at that. Definitely check it out. It's a very good Instagram. Doug, thank you so much.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me, Bill. It's always a joy and a pleasure.
That sounded like it was a lie, is what that sounded like.
It sounded sarcastic, but it wasn't, in fact, genuine.
Okay. I'll take your word for it. Thanks, Doug. Guys, that's it. We've previewed all 8 NFL divisions. There's none left, unless there's a 9th division I'm not aware of that you can get to secretly. We did it, 32 for 32. We are finished with that part of the offseason. Of course, the NFL starts next week, so we are going to be back next week previewing week 1. Very exciting after Labor Day to get to. We have actual football. It's very fun, very exciting, and more Bill Martineau Show coming to talk about those very fun, very exciting things next week.